Department of Justice, needs to prosecute people. Human Rights Watch just called, renewed its call for prosecutions based on these new documents. It's something we've long said, but the government has to actually want to do it, and that's
Very
a problem.
Quickly, how'd you get these documents, and are there more?
We got these documents through a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit. Some of them we've been fighting over for over a decade. And yes, there will be more. There's so much more left to know about this program, and it's essential that we know about it now.
Dror Ladin, we want to thank you for being with us, staff attorney at the ACLU National Security Project Council in the FOIA case that led to the release of the CIA documents, as well as in the ACLU suit against Mitchell and Jess and the two psychologists who designed the CIA torture program. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has three job openings, an office coordinator, news producer, and a senior video news producer. Go to our website at democracynow.org and apply immediately. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Caron, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez, Mike DiFilippo, and Miguel Noguera are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, R.L. Boone, Vesta Godars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now! Check our website at democracynow.org for transcripts, video, and audio podcasts. Thanks so much.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for a public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. The new WHFR Journal. Here we are, another exciting show, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronick, and I'm joined in the studio by my co-host, John Conroy. Hi, John. How was the drive from Gros Eagle today?
Heavily trafficked, Jay.
Okay, everybody's out and about, nice sunshine. And
lots of construction on,
that's right.
On the routes to 75.
Okay.
Volume.
That's right.
Volume.
Yeah. And we have a special guest in the studio, and that is because we're initiating the series of interviews with candidates for Michigan 15th District Representative. There'll be a lot of them on the ballot here in Dearborn and the surrounding area, just for us to decide, because this district does represent all of Dearborn and just a few small bits of land one side or the other. But it's one of the few districts in Michigan after the so-called process of gerrymandering that actually looks like a city or a township boundary. It's, for some reason, it's a pretty intact when it comes to 15th District. But there's six candidates going to be on the ballot as Democrats and three for Republicans. And we're trying to invite them all. And today we begin with one of the three Republicans, Paul Sophia. That's S-O-P-H-I-E-A. So welcome to WHFR, Paul.
Hi. Thanks, Jay. Thanks, John, for inviting me. I appreciate this opportunity.
Well, we're going to get right started with the questions here. And, of course, folks, if you have to tune out or something in a few minutes or you're driving your car, just know that you can always, and tell your friends, the show can always be listened to as a podcast anytime after the broadcast is finished at 2 o'clock every Friday. You just go to our website, whfr.fm, click on Talk Shows, and then click on WHFR Journal, because we've got two different talk shows, big choice there, and then select the date. And, of course, today is June the 17th, 2016. So we'll jump right in, Paul, with a typical background question. So tell us about yourself, education, employment, and if you like, family.
Okay, yeah, thanks. I grew up in Detroit, actually, and I came to Dearborn via marriage. My wife, her family was here since after World War II. They're from Italy, and grandparents, my in-laws, my wife, and now our kids have all been in Dearborn. We got married in the early 80s. And we've been here ever since, had a couple houses, and we've resided in our house now for about 25 years. I am right now a substitute teacher. My division, I've been in the medical industry for about 35 years. The division I was with was dissolved, so I took a buyout, and I started substitute teaching in the Dearborn schools, and also was a director of development and strategy for a clinic for the working uninsured. So I like to stay busy. I like the clinic because you get hands-on experience with what works, what doesn't, what needs to be done. I've got a bachelor's and a master's in business. Like I said, I've been married, three daughters, and here I am now in my spare time. I do appreciate the experience, though, in the Dearborn schools. Everybody has a solution, an idea, a thought. Very few people actually have classroom experience. And when I started doing that, that's what I was looking for. What can I do, not only to teach the lesson at hand, but how do you actually build an infrastructure that works? Also, I was an instructor at Davenport University in the business department. That was a part-time
gig. Sure, yep. Of course, there's always possibilities for you here at Henry Ford College, too, if you need a side gig at any point.
I'd like to be a DJ.
We have a training class for that.
TCM 189.
All right. We'll get you a brochure on the way out.
Okay.
Okay. So you're definitely one of those Dearborn people. I can only say that I moved here in 1979. So that some people say we're still a newbie. My gosh. Gee. Anyway, so let's jump right into political experience and knowledge. This is the first time you're running for office?
Yes, it is. I have been appointed by Governor Snyder to his Commission on Middle Eastern Affairs. So I served on that commission until I declared my candidacy, and then it was better to resign because of conflicts of interest and things like that. So,
how did you get his attention for that particular appointment?
Very active here in the Dearborn area and community. I was one of the early adapters when he first ran. In fact, they had everybody there running on the Republican side was a politician, and he was the only one. So I was one of the early ones that got out in front and supported him and kind of helped him in the city, as well as he's a Dearbornite, his wife's a Dearbornite, and it seemed like a natural fit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were part of Snyder's campaign, in other words.
I was.
Yeah, right.
Independent volunteer.
Okay. So you haven't been going to the Republican meetings monthly, or have you started? Or
oh, yes. Uh-huh. I'm on the executive committee for the 12th Congressional District. Right. Back when we had 15 districts, I was the chair of 15. And then when they consolidated and we lose population all the time, which we got to stop.
I thought I'd bring that up because in the Michigan system, you can get your name on the ballot. You identify yourself as a Democrat, Republican in the primaries, and you don't have to be a member of the party. I'm just saying, I'm just double checking there.
Yep.
So why did you choose to run for this office? Well, you've already said you had some time because you took the buyout, so you're, like you might say, semi-retired, but you're still doing the part-time teaching work. So why now, and why this particular race?
Well, now is a good time. I think there's a lot of positive things going on in Michigan, and we've got to continue that trend as well as work on some of the other things that obviously need to be worked on. There's a lot of problems and issues, but you have to balance the good, keeping that trajectory, and then the things that need some improvement. You got to have somebody there with experience and the ability to work through issues. So that's probably it. And right now, I'm still fresh. I'm off my game. I'm still on my game. I'm working, like I said, volunteering with the clinic to stay active in the business realm and working, like I said, as a substitute. So it's good now. It's good. It's summertime, no students around, so I can get out there and do stuff.
One of the questions I have on my list here is, who are your political heroes? Obviously, you've mentioned Governor Snyder, that if you worked for his election, you must have thought well of him at least at that time. But I think the bigger question is here, how would you identify yourself as Republican? Obviously, we know there's the Tea Partiers, which is not an official thing, but extremely conservative people. And there's some Republicans who actually are quite libertarian, but they're not part of the libertarian parties. For example, Rand Paul, who tried for the Republican nomination, would see himself that way, and his dad, of course, too, who actually did run as a libertarian for president back in the 90s. So how would you identify yourself? Middle of the road, liberal? I mean, there were such things as liberal Republicans, Nelson Rockefeller and a few back in the 60s. But
right.
So what? How would you align yourself if voters would like to know where you might place yourself philosophically, if not theoretically?
That's a good question. There's a lot of labels. None of them really fit me. If I were to win this, I would represent the voices of Dearborn. And those are my constituents, and those are the interests that I need to represent. There's good, there's bad in both parties. So drawing this line and saying, because you're this or you're that, you're good or bad, doesn't make sense to me. On my brochure, you'll notice it says, I'm Republican by party, independent by nature.
Yes.
So I do want to keep that independence. I don't see myself towing anybody's water, carrying anybody's water, if it does not benefit the voters of Dearborn, whether they vote Republican, Democrat, or stay home. That's my constituent, and those are who the people that I have to represent.
It has to be tough in the first year, once you're elected, because, I mean, I've talked to George Durrani about this, and Gary Warrenchuk, who was a Republican when he was elected as a representative and is now a Democrat, of
right.
course, but... And they said, well, in the first year, you don't really know the system, that is, how to get things done. And so you follow whatever the political party you're affiliated with tells you, and or a lot of lobbyists come by, and you really can't do too much thinking for yourself. And I think both of them, I haven't talked to Durrani, I like to give exit interviews on the air of these people leaving, as they did with Gary Warrenchuk. And Gary clearly said when he left after 6 years as representative, I'm just now figuring out how to be effective.
Right.
And he's not a dumb guy. I mean,
no, he's not.
Seriously. I mean,
he's a good guy.
It's just the system there. And I know that certain people have been chosen by political parties, Democrats, I'm thinking of in particular, but probably Republican parties too. And they pretty much just toe the line with whatever they're told to do in terms of votes. And of course, you probably can't be the chair of a committee in the first year, even if there's a Republican majority. Maybe you have to wait till the second year or something to have some power in terms of committee work. So that's really difficult, I think, for an independent. But you think you're, because of re-election, you know, in 2 years, you got to find money and
yes, you do.
Get re-elected. Of course, your first issue is getting elected. So
right, yes.
probably premature to talk about later, but I'm just saying the first year has got to be a challenge.
Well, I got to get through August, and then hopefully I'll get through the November. So there's a couple hurdles.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump into Michigan issues then. Political heroes.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
Go ahead.
You're reading my mind.
Yeah, go back.
Yeah, talk kind of ties in two things about independence and about political heroes. And this is going to be an odd situation. You're not going to hear many people say this, but one of my political heroes is Dwight Eisenhower. And it's not for what he did, it's for what he didn't do. Remember, we were right off of World War II. We were right off of using the nuclear weapons. He was encouraged by the Republicans, by the Democrats, by his generals, and by everybody in Congress to nuke in North Korea or in Korea. And he had the independence, the strength, the integrity, and the will to tell them all no. And everything else comes from us still being here, because we could have, God knows, had what if he'd have done that, and if Russia would have come up and done that because of their alliance back then, what kind of world were we living in? That takes one heck of a leader to say no to everybody in political power. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like him. There's a lot of other people that have done things, but character, integrity, and strength, and against nuclear war, I think that's admirable.
One of my favorite books I read in high school was Profiles in Courage, written by John Kennedy. But
I read that one, yes.
But still, he talked about a lot of people in the history of America who were politicians in very difficult places, and they made difficult choices that they felt were the best, and perhaps they were in the long run. Kennedy thought they were making good choices, but their lives didn't end too well, unfortunately. They usually they suffered the consequences, but
right.
Sometimes that's important. Okay, well, I have to ask Donald Trump, Republican, presumptive nominee. Do you see at this point an affiliation? Can you say, as most Republicans are saying today, that you would endorse him for president?
I don't think I would endorse him.
Okay.
I'm not convinced he's a Republican.
Yeah, well, there's an issue. You know.
I mean, you know, I'm not sure about this election. You know, Hillary Clinton's, you know, wants to bomb more people. He wants to bomb less. You know, and they're going back and forth. He's pushing for the traditional Democrat vote, and she's getting out there, you know, talking to people in Wall Street. I'm confused. So I can't come out and endorse.
Well, I would think the Arab American population in Dearborn, and I just got the latest issue of the Arab American News and their editorial about the terrible events in Orlando last week.
Yes.
But Trump seems pretty certain he would try to ban all Muslims coming into the country. I'm not sure how he can identify a Muslim person, first of all, but he certainly didn't seem to understand who it was that committed the crime in Orlando, and whether he was born in America or born in Afghanistan or whatever. So, but he, you know, as I certainly the tradition of not fully endorsing the party's candidate. Paul Ryan, is just the Speaker of the House right now, just barely endorsed Trump. He's sort of acknowledged Trump. Let's put it that way. That's how I see it. I acknowledge that you're the party's nominee, or you will be the party's nominee. So it's going to be a question. I don't know how people around the country are going to stay. I noticed that some congressmen, it was in the Times today, are actually asking George W. Bush to come out of retirement and campaign for them for their November election, not to ask Trump to come by. That's everybody's choice. So definitely, it's politics is a strange game. John, do you want to start helping me here with the toss him a couple issues and see where he stands?
Well, I have a. Let me just say,
if the listeners turned in late, we have our special guest Paul Sofia with us. He's on the Republican ticket. He'll be in the Republican primary in August, and he's got two competitors. So there's three people, and you have to make the choice of which, if you're a Republican or want to vote in that primary, which is the best candidate that you want to support, that you want to vote for 15th District Michigan representative. Okay. Now, John, go ahead.
When you mentioned Dwight Eisenhower, that was someone I admire as well. And for the position that he had to take and the position that he had been in as ETO commander and et cetera, that took quite a lot of courage to say no.
It did.
I agree with you 100% there. I'm kind of interested in a little bit of micro topics. You know, you are now substitute teaching. Have you had a chance to sub in any of your kids' classes?
Oh, my kids are...
Are they all out of school by this time?
Yep, the last one graduated last week, and my middle one is a special ed teacher. So she brought a lot of insight from what her life is from the time she walks into the school to the time that she walks out of school. And she brings her work home with her, meaning not just the physical work, but what she goes through and what these kids go through.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of hard to ignore some real life stories. And there's nobody could fix what is going on. If anybody says they can, then they're gravely naive and they really need to see what's going on and what can be done to help. So that's a touching issue.
Well, with your experience in teaching, what have you seen that can be made improvements in the Dearborn schools?
Well, two things. Not to be too cliche, but I can certainly build an argument around. The first one is let the teachers teach. The second one is let the kids learn. There are so many things that a teacher has to do that isn't necessarily relevant to education. Let's look at our guidelines and how these all trickle down. We have a Department of Education in Washington. It comes down to Lansing, who put their interpretation on it. It comes down to the districts, to the schools, to the principal, tell the teacher to implement. Not one place, not one spot, not one stop is there any input from the bottom up. It's all top down. You want a recipe for disaster, for bureaucracy? That's the recipe. We've got to get teachers in there talking about what they need to teach, and then they've got to be given the mission to teach, and we've got to stand behind that mission, and kids have to learn. And that's the only duty and responsibility. I don't see what else they can actually do any better. Now, that's in a perfect world. I know there's give and take. There's 110 people in Lansing. Heaven knows how many bureaucrats are in Washington. But ideally, to the extent of my ability, that's what I would do, is take something upstairs versus push everything downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Go, I'll just add that my daughter teaches in the public school system in Southfield, and seventh grade science. And she's constantly complaining that since it began of teaching to the test. She's sort of forced to spend weeks and weeks out of the year specifically so they can answer certain types of questions. Not exact questions, because that would be against the rules, but they sort of know where they have to go. So it completely disrupts the whole educational pattern of learning a broad amount of information and seeing the interconnections when you're teaching towards a test. And of course, you're not supposed to talk about that, and that's not actually good. No one would say that was good. But I think we would agree that assessment is good. I mean, finding out, are you achieving goals? How much are the students learning in many different ways? I have to mention that here at Henry Ford College, when it was Henry Ford Community College, starting about 15 years ago, it was the teachers' union that actually first introduced an assessment program. And several years later, it became required for accreditation that we have one anyway. But, you know, so the college here has had a history of empowering the teachers through our union, and the union has actually taken the lead in assessing not only the achievement of the students, but the quality of the teachers, too. So it was actually evaluation of their own union members, but the union members agreed to this system and how to make it fair and objective. And it was before the college even forced us or outside groups. So I do think that the people on the front lines or the teachers really agree with you on that. I've said that on my show before, and of course all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College.
Or WHFR.
But they've heard me say that before. So, but there are things that have to be done from the top down, but at this point in the system in Southfield, you know, my daughter tells me there's very low morale because the principals can sort of just choose who they don't want to have continue for the next year, no matter seniority or any objective criteria. I mean, just sort of, we don't think you're doing a good job. That's enough to actually get them out of their job. And so it's definitely something that will require attention. And if you do succeed in becoming elected as our representative, there's so many education issues that you'll have a chance to deal with, as well as funding, of course.
Right. Yes.
So, yep. You feel the schools need more money?
I think we need to do evaluation. Money is always good. We could probably use some. Recently, we've come close to being on par, getting back into our schools what we pay in taxes. So that's a good first step. The second step is really to see what we need to do to keep the levels even, so we are getting value for our money, or at least a dollar for dollar. Something else we probably need to do is see where that money's going. It looks like there's a few too many administrators. I ain't saying nothing. I mean, you didn't hear that from me.
That sounds like a teacher speaking there. But
yeah, I mean, come on. I've been in business 35 years. I know when organizations get top heavy, tasks don't get done that are meaningful.
One position, just for information, I could kind of understand. I mean, we have added administrators since Dr. Jensen has become our president.
Right.
Many more than we had before, but he actually. We had previously attorneys on retainer to advise the college, especially in crisis moments if we got sued. Didn't happen often. But he actually created a full-time position, a vice presidential position in his cabinet, to have a lawyer full-time here who can actually be proactive in advising and directing everything we do, and tying it into regulations, state regulations, federal regulations. And it saves can save a lot of the crisis moments that way, and probably actually saves money in the long run, because the retainer was only good and, you know, it was expensive for the to get the company's attention, but when they came in, they were still charging their $200 an hour or whatever,
right?
And this person full-time, it's just part of their salary. So I think that's going to be an interesting cost-cutting provision, especially as you mentioned, there's so many regulations that have to be followed and severe financial economic punishments if we don't, that was probably a good job. So sometimes that's true, but I would agree with you that the teachers, in fact, teachers and regulations even from the legislature in the last couple of years have seemed to indicate that teachers must not do anything administrative, that, you know, like their union contracts, they can't be empowered to do things that only a minister should be doing, like the calendar.
Right.
Well, teachers have families and they know their students, and being part of negotiating that, we've always done it before, but it looks like the legislature wants only the administrators or the district to decide on the days of the calendar, which, well, it makes happen quick. There's no time wasted in negotiating anything, but you know, just
well, you mentioned Dr. Jensen, and I know he's got a good reputation.
Yes, he does.
I know people really, really like his vision and what he's doing for it. So I'd say Henry Ford is in good hands now. I know a lot of the instructors, and I work with some of them on outside projects, and he's available.
He was able to.
He's wonderful.
To get rid of our $16 million deficit that he inherited when he came in, and which was a surprise to him. He didn't know that when he was being hired. Surprise. And a lot of the faculty and administrators took salary cuts and in order to help that plan. We have made a lot of movements,
strides,
forward, and that's been good. Well, I was going to mention Detroit, but that's another long story. You didn't mention the sort of balance. I think Detroit is in such desperate situation that it is going to take more money than the legislature. That's my opinion. You don't have to answer this. More money than the legislature introduced or is offered, which I found out last week is not just money. It's a loan, for gosh sakes. Unless the article was wrong about $617 million loan. So they're not really out of debt if it's a $617 million loan. But, oh well. But it seems to me that they're in such deep straits that it's going to take a lot more effort, maybe even more cost per student, to get it all straightened out and get them back to having a really good system, which is what they need, certainly, they haven't had. Okay, that was my opinion. John, continue with issues here.
Okay, Jay, thank you. Paul, being tied to the medical industry as well as education, you must have opinions about health insurance and how that's changing in the school system as well as citywide and Dearborn. And as an interesting example, I'm married to a teacher in the Downriver District area, and I just got a call that's saying that the parameters are changing. Be prepared for higher deductibles, et cetera. How is that? How are you affected by that?
I think we're all affected by that. It's affected in ways we don't see yet. That's a big question, but I'm going to focus on the larger, and then we'll funnel down to the specifics.
Sure.
We're not going to see things. If you're happy right now with the medicines that are out there, meaning you think we're doing good enough with Alzheimer's, with cancer, with these other things, then we don't need to do anything. We can keep going after the drug companies that are enemy. If you think there's improvements to be made, if you know somebody 80, 85 years old or perfectly healthy, but yet they have dementia or something like that, they need more research, we need more development. So we can't go after the people that are, or the companies that are coming after our futures. You know, us folks, you know, early, late baby boomers or something like that. We're going to need some things. Secondly, so we can't go after that. We have to let the creative and the scientific minds create. To bring it down to our level right now, anything that you have that you're paid for and a third party is involved, they can give you at a certain cost. Next year, they could take away and raise your cost. You are not in control. If we had policy and flexibility, and this is one of the things I'd like to see incorporated in our curriculum, is healthcare literacy. Mm. So somebody goes to a school, their parent, the kids are educated on it, and what they do is they plan for when they get sick. There should be tax breaks. There should be initiatives. There should be all of these things available for the kids. I don't have all the answers. I wanted to get the parents' input on it, my constituents' input on it. How can they prepare for their kids' future so they could purchase insurance when they need it?
Preventive medicine.
Preventative medicine. So, you know, if smoking is the biggest cause and biggest driver of our health care, why don't we have a class on let's not smoke? Let's have a class on, you know, make it age appropriate, but this is what your cardiovascular system does. This is what happens if you don't take care of your blood pressure. Go outside and play, for Pete's sake. Exercise is the best thing for preventing strokes. You know, once you get up there, you get the medicine, it makes you groggy, it saves your life, you have nowhere to go. But by the same token, if you know about this, you could stay away from, or you can give yourself treats at the appropriate time. You don't sit down and eat a gallon of ice cream, which I used to be guilty of, and I was only getting started.
We have about 10 minutes left in the 30 minutes that we've allotted for you. And just a follow-up on that, I noticed that the state of Michigan is now, for the last several years, it's issued requirements for high school graduation and taking certain classes, so many classes of this topic or that. And recently they just added civics, a civics class, that is a class teaching about citizenship and politics and so on, which was amazing to me because I thought everybody was still teaching that, but apparently they haven't in recent years because of a lot of other requirements, or sometimes picking up, some of the schools have picked up electives that that are interesting, perhaps useful, but there's only so much time in a day for right. so many classes. But I wish there was more, I agree with you, more life survival skills taught, whether it's about health or personal finances,
Absolutely.
Which includes how to choose insurance policies. My daughter graduated from Dearborn, Edsel Ford, and didn't know the difference between a credit union and a savings bank, commercial bank.
Right.
And so I said, well, you going to college, you're going to need probably a checkbook and a credit card now.
Yeah.
Well, how do I get those? I don't know what to choose from. Oh, okay, well, gee, I had that in, I think it was a ninth grade class I had, which is just called personal finance.
You know, so, Jay, can I just comment on that?
Yeah.
Because that was the second point I made a note here, because that's something else that should be added to the curriculum, is a economic, if you will, literacy class. Because all of these tax increases we see are going to the state. What if part of the health care and part of the economic literacy courses taught people that, okay, we're going to be paying 20% more for our registration. How much is that going to be? And with the gas and stuff, it's going to be $700 to $1,000 per car. What if you took that per year? What if you took that money and you were 18 years old, or your parents put that in there when you were younger? Instead of putting it in a tax that goes to Lansing, what if you put it in your account? And then you work with the compound interest to grow. So you have the financial security. And so those tax increases, oh, it's only 100 here, it's only 50 cents there. You know what? Compound that out. And you're talking about absolute economic security that they are taking away from you and driving up to Lansing.
Yeah, well, kind of like a lower-level Michigan education trust.
I wish the interest rates were on common savings accounts were what they were when I was growing up, but now it's less than 1% most
right.
places, so that compounding kind of doesn't kick in for quite a few years.
Well, you still have stocks to buy.
Well, yeah, if you know anything about and that was interesting in my civics class that we even talked about the stock market.
Right.
As part of the whole system, you know, we even did some projects as if we were investing and followed and tracked some stocks as if we knew what we were doing, which we didn't. So I'm just saying those are important life skills. And very often, for example, assessment tests, they're not concerned about that. It's other specific bits of information about science, chemistry, history that that don't immediately affect survival skills. Well, we don't only have time for maybe another, a topic here. How do you feel about the environment? Are we still pure Michigan?
We're
because
getting
of
there.
Flint?
Yeah, we're getting there. I think as far as the environment is concerned, that's something that affects everybody, regardless of what party you are. And from a Michigan standpoint, we can take a look at some of the legislation, and if need be, we can strengthen it. But that's going to be kind of on a national level. So, you know, as far as coming out and trying to find energy sources, I think we should encourage anything and everything that would help us with long-term energy, make sure it's sustainable, make sure it's clean, and make sure that we are in the forefront of it. I don't think any bureaucrat has that answer, and I think the businesses that have money to invest that are in that business should be allowed to grow it. And if jobs are created from that, so be it. But I don't know how a bureaucrat could tell you in 20 years what's going to happen. I mean, Thomas Edison himself said the best type of energy is the combustible engine. And let's face it, he's the guy with the electric light bulb. So that was back then. Now is a different story. Yeah, we need to branch out and figure it all out and start working on it.
Right. Well, Ford and I think Edison tried electric cars, but the battery technology wasn't there in the early days. So they did make a switch, and that's why they made those comments.
Right.
But batteries are a lot different these days. Anyway, got to move. Okay, real quick. I had a question here about what will you do if elected, if your party is in the majority? Well, Republicans probably still will be, and you know, either because they're popular with the voters or because of gerrymandering. Either way, it looks like there'll still be a majority. And so you should be able to have some positive influence if elected as a Republican on what gets passed. Speaking, you know, just from my own point of view here. So that's good. I don't think you have to worry about what do you do if you're a minority. That's a real question for Democrats, of course. What can they do? Just vote no on everything, or do you collaborate? Do you try to compromise? That's a real question. So in the time remaining, we're going to give you about, 3 minutes for our summary here. First of all, any endorsements from local groups that you'd want to mention? Again, I don't feel that, you know, that that's required, that you are the person you are, and people should try to figure that out. But sometimes, if you have groups that are endorsing you, you can mention them quickly right now.
Okay. Right now during the primary, it's a little difficult because everybody wants to go with whoever gets through the primary. They hate to back somebody and then, you didn't make it.
I see. Yeah.
I can tell you, I am anticipating, and I'm going to emphasize anticipate, an endorsement from the lieutenant governor, hopefully the governor, and some of the political areas around here. Our congressional district, the Republican congressional district, has endorsed me as their candidate, as has APAC for on the Republican side. Mm-hmm. So those are the ones that I feel comfortable about speaking now that I've either had or I'm likely to get.
Right. APAC is Arab American Political Action Committee.
Right.
And they made their choices a month or two ago and interviewed all the candidates.
I think the reason they did that is very Dearborn-ish, if that's a word, is because of Dearborn's middle-class values, the hard work, the ethics, the family. Those things transcend, you know, any and all boundaries of the city. I want to get the middle class to grow. Upward mobility is, I don't have anybody speaking about that locally or nationally, and they understand it. Dearborn people understand it, whether they're in the unions, whether they're, you know, the docs, the lawyers, the accountants. So that's something that helps us all. And so we got to get that mobility, upward mobility going back. And
through jobs and the economy, which I know is your primary themes.
And it goes deeper than that. It goes not only to jobs, but to the opportunity, the education, the ability for people to chart their own course and not have needless boundaries put in front of them by bureaucrats. Also, key issue we didn't talk about is public safety. Now, that goes to the police and fire. Mm-hmm. That goes to our infrastructure, the bridges and the roads. And we've got to get all of this stuff settled. We've got to get it straightened out, and we've got to talk. We've got things going on, but they may not be the best. We need to revisit them. That's why I propose a sunset limit on everything, or so we could see what's happening in 5 years. The world, you know, we didn't have iPhones 5 years ago. There were iPods, and they had the big ones. Mm-hmm. Well, now we do. So let's evaluate, and let's get a continuity of good governance. And that's what I would fight for. I mean, I can't tell you what the issues are going to be by the time my fourth or fifth year around. So, you know, I will say we got to stay open and flexible.
Now, have you had the opportunity to speak with Chief Haddad and others in the public safety field?
I am meeting with the head of the firefighters union tomorrow. We're having breakfast. Also, the police chief, his union.
Police Officers Association.
Yeah, yeah, I've contacted them, haven't heard back from them.
Okay.
So I'm in the process of doing that. I really, really, really want to ensure that we focus on the growth, the opportunities, and public safety. I mean, those are the three things that everything falls into. And those are the things of public safety that affects us every day. You know, you pick up the phone, hey, my light bulb's out, it's dark, somebody's broke my window, that's everyday stuff. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Okay, how can people get in touch with you, find out more about you and your campaign? I've got your website right in front of me here. Sophia, that's S-O-P-H-I-E-A, for the number four, rep, R-E-P.com. So that's Sophia for rep. .com is the website. A lot of information there. We mentioned before we went on that there is going to be a League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights information session about the ballot. It's going to be Tuesday night, July 12th, and you're going to be able to be there.
Correct.
6 p.m. I'm trying to remember where now. City Hall?
City Council. Hall,
City Council
City
Chambers.
Council, right.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in closing, I would like to say three things that people should look at as they're evaluating candidates, and they're proposing programs with very limited resources that need to be prioritized. How much is it going to cost? Who's going to pay for it? What's the expected benefit? Those are the things that should be looked at, and as we evaluate things, because we are going to have to prioritize regardless of the issue.
Well, thank you very much. That's a great summation. That was his one-minute summation. That was his 30 minutes of fame here on WHFR. And
I'm the candidate making waves.
Really, thank you very much. Oh, and he listens to WHFR, and he knows our slogan. Uh-oh. Really trying to get us on his side there. But, no, a lot of very intelligent responses. It's really a challenge to consider running for office and then, of course, get elected too. Oh my gosh. And then what you do once you're elected. So thank you very much for choosing this path for yourself and for being able to come here and to speak your mind. Good luck at getting your message out and speaking to many more people before August 2nd. And folks, remember, August 2nd is before Dearborn Homecoming, so you can't wait till Dearborn Homecoming to walk around the field and see the politicians there before you vote, because the election is before homecoming starts. So start finding out about these people. I wanted to mention that the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights debate from July 12th will be videotaped by CDTV in Dearborn and will be run on their cable channel and also available from the cityofdearborn.org website too. And, of course, this show and this interview will be on our website at whfr.fm for future reference. Thank you very much, Paul, for being with us today. I'm just going to put on some comments here from Jack Lessenberry from Michigan Radio.
Jay, one quick
question. Yes, go ahead,
question.
John. Sure.
Jay, Paul, do you have a committee office or phone number people may be able to call or
yes, my
visit?
Yeah, 313-319-7697. And if they want to send me a letter, it's P.O. Box 2644 Dearborn 48123. And my email, you can tap into that on my website. I love communicating with people and giving them ideas. You know, like I said, I'm Republican by party, but I'm independent by nature. I claim not to represent the voters, not special interest.
And you made yourself very available in all those ways. Thanks so much again,
John Jay,
for being
it's a pleasure.
Here.
Thank you.
John Jay.
John Jay. Oh, it's like I know that name from somewhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jack Lessenberry's comment is going to be about the Libertarian Party candidate for president, which you may not have heard of before, but also a little bit more about that bridge from Detroit to Windsor, Ontario, which is going to be named after Gordie Howe, too. So here we go, and we'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal right after these comments.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. For many years, I've predicted, so far incorrectly, that one of these years, the Libertarian Party would achieve a breakthrough on the national political scene. Not that they would elect a president, but that they would become a serious force to be reckoned with. After all, the Libertarians have a message that ought to resonate with both the millennials and many of us aging, self-obsessed baby boomers. They say you should be able to do whatever you want in your private life. Smoke pot, have sex with consenting adults of whatever flavor you fancy, that should be none of the government's business. But except for some minimal functions like national defense, don't expect a government to be the nanny state that provides for you. Libertarians say you'd pay a lot less in taxes if they were in charge and get absolutely no wars unless this nation were attacked. That's a philosophy tailor-made to appeal to any fairly affluent 20-something who's read The Fountainhead. But for some reason, the libertarians have never really managed to be taken seriously. Oh, they've elected a state legislator here and there. The Michigan Libertarian Party proudly brags they have city council members in South Haven and Hazel Park, but that's about as successful as they've got. Part of the problem is that libertarians are often seen as, well, one bubble off plum, as a carpenter I know might say. Take James Weeks, a libertarian candidate for Livingston County Sheriff. He won national notice last month at the party's convention in Florida, but not for his eloquence. Weeks stripped his clothes off at the podium and did a little dance, wearing only a thong. Unfortunately, as Detroit's Metro Times put it, he has an unconventional body type for a striptease performer. This did not help the party's overall image. Nevertheless, there are signs the libertarians may do better this year than ever before. Michigan was one of only two states where they weren't on the ballot last time. This year, they are, and the party seems on course to winning ballot access in all 50 states. Flying pretty much under the radar, former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson 4 years ago became the first libertarian presidential candidate to get more than 1 million votes. This year, Johnson's running again, this time with William Weld, a former liberal Republican governor of Massachusetts, as his running mate. They're running as high as 11% in some national polls, and Johnson's goal is to get that up to 15%, which would mean he'd be included in televised debates. That's unlikely to happen. But with this year's deep dissatisfaction with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I wouldn't be surprised to see the libertarians get 5 million votes or more. The conventional wisdom is that they'll damage Trump, though Johnson himself thinks he may take more votes from Clinton. Even 10% wouldn't be enough to establish them as a legitimate political party. That would take a lot of victories for lower-level offices. Yet, this is the year when libertarians may finally have a chance to get the nation to take their views seriously, provided that they keep their pants on.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. They said goodbye to Gordie Howe yesterday after funeral ceremonies that seemed more appropriate for a former head of state than a hockey player. Howe was more than a mere athlete, of course. He was a touchstone, a link to our history. It was a memory of consistency and class, of a time when players stayed with one team most or all of their careers, before steroid scandals and when Detroit was one of the largest and richest cities in the world. Part of all this was baby boomers and those older mourning a bygone era and their own pasts. But what about the ultimate tribute to this man, the Gordie Howe International Bridge over the Detroit River? Gordie himself was still well enough and lucid enough to appreciate it when they told him the new bridge would be named after him as a symbol of both nations. Yet, as he was laid to rest this week, we suddenly noticed that nothing seemed to be happening with the new crossing. By this time, I fully expected shovels would be in the ground and earth-moving equipment crawling over the approaches in both countries like a swarm of insects. But all is quiet. Canada hasn't even selected a private partner to build that bridge. For years, we've been told that the new bridge should be open to traffic by 2020, but it seems increasingly clear that there's no way that's going to happen. Governor Rick Snyder was asked about this Wednesday when he held a press conference with his opposite number Kathleen Wynne, the Premier of Ontario. Both parties offered bland reassurances that all was well, though they began to back away from saying the bridge would be done on time. "We're willing to do whatever we can to make this happen," Ontario's leader said. "I believe we're on a positive path," the governor blandly echoed. But the truth seems to be that things appear to be either stalled or moving at a crawl. Land acquisition on the Michigan side is still far from complete. What matters more is what's happening in Canada, which is essentially paying for the entire bridge. Mark Butler, the spokesman for the entity overseeing the project, the Windsor-Detroit Bridge Authority, told a reporter earlier this week that we could ask companies who want to build a bridge to submit their bids in the near future, a process that'll take months, which means no shovels in the ground this year. "Extremely complicated," were the words Butler used for both the procurement process and building the bridge itself. But what's really behind this delay? Chris van der Doelen, a savvy, longtime columnist for the Windsor Star newspaper, thinks national Canadian politics are involved. Conservative Stephen Harper, a huge backer of the bridge, was defeated by Justin Trudeau and the Liberals last fall. Van der Doelen notes, the federal Liberals have always been tight with Maroon, whose Ambassador Bridge group of companies has supported the party, he wrote Tuesday. He thinks perhaps Ottawa is throwing the Ambassador Bridge owner a financial bone by delaying the bridge that would compete with his as long as possible. For the sake of our economy, I hope he's wrong, but I'm beginning to worry that he's not.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Jay Koronek here with you for today's show, which is being done on June 17th, 2016. More election news related to and/or reminders about that August 2nd primary. Again, if you're not registered to vote, you've got until about July 2nd, okay, about a month ahead. So don't wait. And you say, well, there's no one I know about that I want to vote for. Well, on this show, you just found about out of 30 minutes worth of Paul Sophia. You want to vote for him? Well, you can't if you're not registered. So by all means, get registered to vote and remember this election, circle it on your calendar. But what's going to be on the ballot besides the 15th district representative? Well, races for judges. First of all, in Wayne County, and there's too many for me to mention all the names there, but secondly, 19th district court. Which is hits us a little closer to home, where there's three candidates running. Next Friday, we're going to have Abby Bozzi, who has been endorsed by the APAC, as it's called, for this position. We did interview Gene Hunt, who's a candidate for 19th District Judge, back on May 27th. He got an early start here, and you can listen to that on our podcast. And we'll continue interviewing people as available as we schedule them on this show all the way through July. So maybe you'll find someone you want to vote for and that you didn't know about before. And so you can't do it if you're not registered, and it won't make a difference unless you do vote on August 2nd. But what's going to be on that ballot besides these candidates I mentioned for judge positions and the representative position? Several ballot proposals. One I identified to you last year in the last show that I just discovered is that the there's going to be a renewal of the tax rate limitation. To renew the tax rate limitation currently in place that provides for a temporary 3.5 mil supplemental millage to avoid reductions in programs and services. In 2011, Dearborn voters approved the same supplemental millage. But if it's not renewed this year, the city's revenues will fall approximately $11 million beginning next year and each year after that, resulting in service reductions. That's what the ballot question explanation says. So renewing it again temporarily for no more than 5 years is what they're asking for. So it would not be an increase in your taxes, but it, rather than a reduction because of the millage expiring, it would just continue. Mayor O'Reilly was on our show on April 22nd and said that he actually was in favor of other kinds of taxation that might be more fair and more continuous for the city. Certainly property tax alone is, and this is kind of a property tax because millage is based on the value of your property. Okay. Kind of interesting to me. I interviewed him on April 22nd and this actually passed. This was endorsed, this ballot proposal, the night before. A special council meeting on a Thursday. They don't usually do Thursdays, April 21st, 2016. I went to the city council website and I dug it up because I couldn't believe I'd never heard about this before. And even Mayor O'Reilly, when I asked him, are we going to need another renewal millage? And he said, well, maybe, probably, I don't know. Well, he knew. because the night before it was approved. He must have been at the council meeting, the special meeting, or he got a copy of it. Interestingly, who was absent? The resolution passed with everyone voting for it except Tefelsky. And, of course, Tefelsky in the past has never voted for taxes or tax increases. So that's why he wasn't there, because what's the point? It's going to pass anyway, I guess. Just so you know who was for it and who was against it. Everybody was for it who was a current council member, but Tefelsky was absent, and we assume that's because he didn't want to directly endorse it. But also, there's a couple of other proposals. There is, one of the proposals, definitely, to renew a county park millage August 2nd. So, again, renewing money for supporting the parks in Wayne County. And that we knew just yesterday, at least in the papers. Dave Herndon wrote that for pressandguide.com, so you might see that in the paper this weekend. Also, we knew in early June, but this is not till November, a tax to back mass transit. Detroit area homeowners will be asked to pay an average of $95 a year in property taxes to support mass transit in the region under the new RTA, Regional Transit Authority of Southeast Michigan. And they need money to get the plan. They got the plan. They were approved in 2012, this RTA, but no money. So they had to have a plan, so it took them 4 years to get to this point. Will you support it or not? I believe I mentioned this last week, but that's a proposal very important, I think, for this whole area to consider for the November ballot. I think there's another proposal, too, that's going to be in August only, and those are always sneaky ones because not a lot of people vote in an August election. And to sneak that in, I call it sneaking it in because, just so you know, very few people that vote in the August primary because they think, oh, it's only a primary. But no, these ballot proposals are going to greatly affect us, and whether they're up or down, and the consequences are significant. So it is really important that everybody who is registered, and everybody should be, who's of the right age and so on, should actually do that voting. We have only 5 minutes before Kitty Love and Highway 61 begins. Best in the Blues from 2 to 4 o'clock this afternoon, and followed by Mike Holloway and more blues. Oh, my goodness. We've got a lot of local blues, a lot of great blues artists that we want to play for you and entertain you on Friday. TGIF. But here's a comment as we're closing up today I made a comment about Detroit Public Schools and the fact last week that according to the bill that's now been signed by Governor Snyder, even though he said he didn't want to do it this way, he signed it anyway, not enough money, not enough supervision of charter schools that he wanted, actually, but he signed it anyway, even though it wasn't what he wanted. Not a very independent thinker there. Anyway, that's my comment, though. I said it's going to be terrible because they're allowing any sort of administrator in charge can just pick anybody, worst-case scenario, off the street to teach in a classroom, and probably at very reduced wages. Boy, they'll save a lot of money. But no certificate, no teaching certificate. Well, you know, in high schools in Michigan, you have to have, if you're full-time, a teaching certificate. That is an accredited program at a college or university teaching you how to teach. Yes, I mean, those programs used to be kind of stupid, pardon my expression, but years ago they didn't really have a lot of real-world connection. These days they're very intense, and they're very helpful. My daughter graduated from University of Michigan Dearborn's Education School, and boy, did they put her through work and internships and co-op experiences, and it's one of the highly rated schools in Michigan these days for graduating teachers for high schools and below, K-12 curriculum, in other words. But I didn't want to say, as an article in the Michigan Capital Confidential, from the Mackinac or Mackinac Center for Public Policy, our conservative think tank that I don't feel thinks very independently, let's put it that way. But they said, gee, that means a professor from college can't teach in the public schools. But now they could in Detroit. And I don't deny that that might be very, very successful. Someone like myself, after 40 years of teaching, I think I know how to handle a classroom and how to organize a lesson and how to get input and feedback from the students. Although I think Detroit would be a challenge for any teacher, no matter how many years of experience. Nonetheless, certainly there are extremely qualified people out there that if they want to teach full-time in schools, maybe they don't need that certificate. But I think it does take maybe a couple of years if you already have a degree to go through the classwork and the special co-op and intern situations required for the certificate. But I would still go with certificates, because otherwise there's no criteria set in Detroit for who these administrators are going to choose. Maybe they're best buddies, best friends. And sure, they'll save a ton of money, but it doesn't mean it's going to be good. So if there's nobody that can really validate except a few administrators, and sorry, I don't feel many administrators have never taught themselves in the classroom. I don't really believe that all administrators without that experience can make good decisions about the classroom. My opinion only. Well, thank goodness it's the end of the show and you don't have to hear any more of this. But I'm just saying, I do agree with Michigan Capital Confidential. Mark this down partially, is that highly qualified instructors are now able to be appointed in the Detroit school system. I just hope they're really highly qualified and there's nothing in the regulations that say what those qualifications have to be. So I think it was a bad idea on the part of our legislature to do that. Also, check out American News, ArabAmericanNews.com, and their print article, print paper will be distributed throughout Dearborn for free tomorrow. Their editorial states that only Omar Mateen is responsible for his actions. They deny that he acted as a representative of Muslims in general, or even radical Islam, and they make an interesting case for that. Also, they point out he was a gay man himself, but he claimed to be disgusted by homosexuals displaying public affection. And, you know, all the news coverage this week, you probably know more about him than you know about some people in your own family, so I won't go into that. You can draw your own conclusions. But their opinion is always well-formed and well-stated, and it's deserving of your reflection on it, too. So check them out, ArabAmericanNews.com, our local newspaper. Thank you for listening. And now it's time for Highway 61. This is WHFR Dearborn, and we'll catch you again next week. Be careful out there.